So today, we're going to discuss about the anathas in general. We'll be discussing on the basis of the chapter entitled The Anatomy of the Cloud of Anatha, which is on pages 5 and 6. Then tomorrow we'll discuss about our first demon, Putana. Actually, in regard to tomorrow, in regard to Putana, we'll be doing something a little unusual. We'll have a little drama about Putana. It's a two-person drama. At least the two people can just read out the parts. It's very nice. It's taken directly from Lalita Madhava of Srila Rupa Goswami, directly out. Very nice discussion between Purnamasi and Gargi, all about Putana, or some things about Putana and her relationship with Krishna and Srimati Radharani. So there are two female parts. I wonder if we have any Mataji's here who are a little experienced in drama speaking. We did this actually earlier this year. Two of the Mataji's did it very nicely. Anyone who's got just a nice voice, you don't have to actually act. All you have to do is stand there and read your part. I'm sure some of you are more than capable. So who'll try? We need Purnamasi is the main part. Mother Mahamaya. Oh, that's kind of it. would you mind doing it?
Tomorrow.
It is. No, tomorrow, when we begin our discussion about Putana. This is your, well, it's the whole script there, your part, your Purnamasi. Your part is in the darker script. And Gargi, not such a big part, but it's important. One other Mataji. What about Mother Madri? Would you like to do it? Okay. Could you just pass it back to her? Thanks. We don't want to embarrass anyone, but I think it'll be very nice. It was very nice when we did it earlier this year. Perhaps we could turn on this fan and maybe open some windows. Otherwise, I think we're really going to get overheated. Yeah, we could actually open the door, that's true. Open the door. Put the curtain. All right, so the anatomy of the cloud of Anatha. Now, this discussion's on the basis of Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's actually part of the discussion which he gives about anathas. He actually talks about anathas on three levels, and this is one level. This is actually the middle level. He talks about anathas which are particularly prominent when a devotee is on the level of bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya literally means performance of devotional activities, and the idea is that bhajana kriya means the level that a person is on when they first begin to seriously execute Krishna consciousness, having previously not been engaged in Krishna consciousness, but now they take up devotional service. So that is bhajana kriya. So he talks about six anathas which are particularly prominent on that level. They're written over on this side of the board here, my right-hand side. I hope you can read my writing. I'll explain them all a little bit in a minute or two. Then, after the level of bhajana kriya, once a person has really made a commitment to devotional service and is really now working hard to advance in devotional service, then they come to the level of anatha nivritti. Anatha nivritti means nullifying unwanted qualities. So these four, which we've described here in our book on pages 5 and 6, these are the four main types of anathas, actually, which a devotee is confronted with on the level of anatha nivritti. Then, on this side of the board, my left-hand side, there's another five types of anathas. These anathas, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they become more prominent in the later stages of anatha nivritti as a person is beginning to come to the level of nishta, or steadiness. In other words, making some fairly substantial advancement, but not yet completely fixed in Krishna consciousness. So, we'll discuss all these three categories of anathas this morning. It's actually very, very interesting, and I'm sure we'll find, if we think about these different anathas, we'll be able to identify our own position in regard to them. Sometimes it can be quite revealing, actually, showing us where we're at, so to speak. So write them down, these six and these five. We'll start off with these six here. When a person begins devotional service seriously, then this is called bhajana kriya. Prabhupada said on a number of occasions that it bhajana kriya more or less indicates around the time of initiation or thereabouts. Anyway, basically the point where a person becomes serious about Krishna consciousness. And then they become confronted by these six anathas on that level of bhajana kriya. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that they tend to follow one after the other in sequential order. In other words, first of all, one would tend to find oneself confronted by utsaha mai. Utsaha mai means, well, utsaha means enthusiasm. As Rupa Goswami says, utsaha nischaya daryat, in Nectar of Instruction. So utsaha mai. Mai means maya or illusion. So a false type of enthusiasm. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, something like a little child who may be just learning to walk or learning to do something, and as the child is just beginning to learn how to do that thing, the child thinks, oh, very good. Now I'm very good. Now I can walk, and then he falls on his face. Something like that. A childish type of enthusiasm. Utsaha mai, false confidence. Then the devotee on the level of bhajana kriya would next tend to find himself or herself confronted with the anatha called gana tarala. Gana means thick. Tarala means thin. Actually, it may be the other way around. But it basically means thick, thin. Diluted, undiluted, like that. Sporadic endeavor. That the devotee, now being engaged in devotional service and beginning to get a little taste sometimes, feels, oh, this is great, and becomes very enthusiastic. But then some minor obstacle comes, and then the devotee loses enthusiasm. So in this way, there's in sporadic endeavor, enthusiasm, then deflation.
Unsteadiness.
Well, this is all unsteady. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely unsteadiness. The idea is thick, thin. The devotee's getting up in the morning, 2 o'clock, chanting like mad, Someone says, hey, why are you chanting like that? You're waking us all up. And the next morning the devotee doesn't get up till 7 o'clock. Something like that. That sort of idea. We're talking about quite neophyte. So that's gana tarala, thick, thin, diluted, undiluted, sporadic endeavor. Then vyuddha vikalpa means indecision. What direction do I take? And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur particularly focuses on the question, not entirely but more than anything else, should I marry or shouldn't I? Should I? Shouldn't I? Yes, I should. No, I shouldn't. Maybe I should, but I don't know. This sort of indecision.
Indecision. One aspect about the mind is that they call it sankalpa and vikalpa, acceptance and rejection.
Uh-huh.
So is there much difference between the regular mental acceptance and rejection and this?
The basic idea is that the devotee isn't really fixed. So the devotee's fluctuating about different directions to take. Should I stay in America? Should I come to India? Should I do Sankirtan? Should I stay in the temple? Now it's not that, like he says, there's a general tendency for there to be like a sequence there. But that doesn't mean that it's absolutely like that. One can still find oneself faced with indecision after many years in devotional service, when one is meant to have gone beyond just the simple level of bhajana kriya. This is just, we're speaking in fairly broad terms here. So indecision. Then, vishaya sangara. Vishaya, of course, means sense gratification. Sangara means something like combat, war. War with sense gratification. Combat with maya. And the way Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains it is that the devotee, being engaged in devotional service and getting a bit more taste and feeling a little more inspired, the devotee starts thinking about, let me reduce my eating and sleeping, and so on and so forth. Has everyone marked themselves present? Not everyone. If you haven't, perhaps you could put your hand up and we can pass. Okay. Just pass it back. One of the Matajis at the back hasn't marked herself present. It's taking a vow, you know, perhaps to eat once a day or cut down sleeping to 4 hours a night. Then the maha plate walks by and the devotee thinks, well, it is a form of Krishna after all. I don't want to be disrespectful or something like that. Anyway, this type of idea, fluctuating. Yeah, but it's the idea is that one is making vows.
And breaking the vows.
Breaking the vows. Vow, well, vows in the sense of reducing one's material activity. And then the next one, niyama akshama, means being unable to uphold Krishna conscious vows, like, by Krishna conscious I mean in terms of one's chanting or one's reading or one's serving. Vishaya sangara means vows to cut down on things like eating and sleeping, and niyama akshama means vows to increase one's devotional activities. Specifically, one takes a vow to chant 32 rounds a day, but one finds one can't uphold it like that. It means inability to uphold vows, but the vows are Krishna conscious vows, like to increase your Krishna conscious activity. Whereas the Vishaya Sangara means inability to uphold vows but vows in regard to the, you could say, material side of your life. Thank you. Yeah, Vishaya Sangara means you may take a vow to eat less, sleep less, or something like that. Niyamakshama means you may take a vow to increase your chanting, increase your reading, offer obeisances to more devotees, or... So there's a difference in the natures of the two types of vows. And then the sixth, Tarangarangani, riding the waves, that one has made a little advancement, so one is now a little bit into Krishna consciousness, and one thinks that, oh yes, now I'm doing quite well. You could say, you could perhaps relate it with the very first one, but in this case, the devotee has actually made a little advancement. And the idea is that having made a little advancement, people may praise you. Some people may even give you money. And you think, yes, quite right. I'm an advanced devotee now, so they should give me money, or they should praise me. So it means you're riding the waves. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says they're just little waves right on the edge of the ocean of devotion. But you're thinking, oh yes, I'm really riding the waves here. Just like we find in Indian communities, a young boy puts on a dhoti and kurta, shaves his head, and goes out on Sankirtan, and the innocent Hindu public, when he knocks on the door, person opens the door and thinks, oh, the Swami has come to our house. But it may be the devotee's first day out. And then they may treat you like a king, or treat you very, very nicely. So Tarangarangani means that you try to enjoy that. Made a little advancement. So according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, these six are not that they won't be apparent on the next level, which is anatha nivritti. They may well also from time to time manifest there, but they're particularly prone to manifest on the level of bhajana kriya, or in the very early stages of getting into Krishna consciousness. Then, having made some advancement, the devotee then comes to the level of anatha nivritti. This is somewhat deeper. So here in our book you'll see we've described, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, there are four types of anathas. These are the main anathas, actually. Anathas arising from previous sin, anathas arising from previous piety, anathas arising from imperfectly performed devotional service or mistakes you make while you're trying to execute your Krishna conscious activities, and anathas which arise from aparad. So then we elaborate a little bit there. He describes there are five types of anathas which arise from previous sin. One is ignorance, avidya. Second is asmita, or false ego, the tendency to identify with the body. Third is rag. Rag meaning material attachment, lust, like that, material attraction. Four is dvesha, hatred or frustration after failing to enjoy, trying to enjoy on the basis of your rag, but you fail and then you get frustrated and disturbed. And then the fifth one is a little more subtle, abhinivesh, acquired nature.
There'll be like idiosyncrasies?
It's a little deeper than that. Acquired nature, one nice term which comes to my mind, I mentioned the other day in Bhagavatam class, Narottam Das Thakur uses the term samsara vasana in Gauranga Balite Habe. Arkabe nitai chandir karuna hoibe, samsara vasana mor, kabe tucha habe. Vasana means deep impressions, something like the fundamental material impressions in the heart. Samsara vasana, these impressions which are all to do with samsara, or as we've said here, acquired nature, the deeper levels of one's conditioning. Not just that because in this lifetime one has a particular body, therefore one has particular attractions, but like the more fundamental level of our material conditioning, absorption in bodily existence. So this is abhinivesh. So these are the basic features of this type of anatha arising from previous sin. Then anathas arising from previous piety, it's quite an interesting concept. Sometimes people think, even devotees have thought from time to time, that we may come to Krishna consciousness because we are pious in the past, or there was some piety in the past. But here we're hearing that piety, mundane piety, is considered an anatha, one of the main anathas. So the idea is that there are two categories here. One is attachment to the mode of goodness and sense gratification in the mode of goodness. And the second is an attraction to mukti, liberation. Now, in our context of devotional service, one very interesting example that comes to mind as far as attraction to the mode of goodness is concerned. Some of you may have known Mother Archavigraha, I assume, who just passed away a few months ago. She became a devotee in South Africa, and I was there at the time, so we were sort of with her as she was getting into Krishna consciousness over a period of time. And initially, she was vegan. Strict vegan, really strict. She had been for 12 years before she became a devotee. And one of the main reasons initially that she came and associated with devotees was because she heard that the Hare Krishna devotees are strict vegetarians. And she was a strict vegetarian. So she thought, oh, good, let me go and associate with them. So she came along on a Sunday and walked into the middle of the Sunday feast in Johannesburg, and it was a very opulent Sunday feast. Deep fried everything, curd, sugar, cream, and all the rest of it. And for one who's a vegan, I assume you know what a vegan is. She told me that when she saw this feast, she thought, these people are crazy. And in certain ways, she might have been right. I mean, you know, from a health point of view. So it actually put her off. And she went away, and she didn't come back for a little while, because she was thinking, you know, that maybe they're vegetarian, but, you know, this type of vegetarian, this is really not right at all. So, that piety mode of goodness, being very attached to, you know, like very pure types of foodstuffs and not these rich, heavy foodstuffs which might be perhaps more in the mode of passion. It was sort of like an anatha, actually, because it put her off Krishna consciousness. Of course, eventually she got into Krishna consciousness and became a very nice devotee. But it can be like that. It can be like that. Like in America now, they're the vegans. And, wow, they're going wild, some of the vegans. They What do? Some of them, the emblem is machine gun, isn't it? Right? Yeah, if you drink milk, you should be killed. And they look at us as being very bad, isn't it? Pete knows the scene. Hardline vegetarians. And they don't like us at all. Right? I mean, they even hate us in some cases. Yeah, they won't take... I mean, some of them are nice, that's true. But the real hardliners, they think these Hare Krishnas are very bad because they take milk. So an attraction to the mode of goodness, but it becomes anatha because it turns a person against Krishna consciousness. Or you may be living in the temple in the city. That is your prescribed duty, but you find the city a bit of a hassle. Noise, fumes, nowhere to walk around peacefully, no, a bit unsafe. So you think, let me go to the country. Let me go to the temple out on the farm, and then I'll be very Krishna conscious out there. But it may be in opposition to the instructions of the spiritual master. So it's an attraction to the mode of goodness, but it can actually be at odds with our real business in Krishna consciousness, so then it can be an anatha. So, of course, naturally, the anathas arising from previous sin would tend to be a lot more prominent, I would think, in most devotees' lives. Attraction to breaking the regulative principles or something like that would tend to be more prominent than this type of anatha. But still, this type of anatha is there. An anatha arising from previous piety, but it places you sort of, it goes up against your real interests in Krishna consciousness. Or, the second category here, an attachment for liberation, personal liberation. You're doing some service, maybe you're the temple president, or something like that, temple commander, but it's a hassle. The devotees argue with you. They won't do what they're told. Sometimes they organize like political parties against you, or things like this happen. So then you think, oh, I don't want to be the temple president any longer. Let me just get some nice service where I can be very peaceful and chant Hare Krishna. Or you may be doing sankirtan. Every now and then people come and bother you. Sometimes it's difficult out there on the streets. So you think, surely I can do some other service which isn't not so demanding. So this is like a Krishna conscious version of an attachment to liberation, personal liberation. I want to be free from problems, but in the context of Krishna consciousness. So it's also anatha, actually. Obviously, we're not really thinking of mukti here in the sense that you may one day think, gosh, I'd really like to merge with the Brahma Jyoti. We don't expect that. But just an attraction to personal liberation, freedom, salvation from problems. But Queen Kunti prays, let the problems come again and again, because when they come, then I'm forced to remember you, and I see you. And when I see you, then I don't have to see repeated birth and death. So these are anathas arising from previous piety. Interesting subject. Then anathas arising from improper performance of bhakti. A little more subtle. That when you practice devotional service, or say when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're watering the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion. But we know that when you water it, you may also water some weeds. In this case, weeds mean that you're performing your devotional service here. Well, I don't mention here, but an example could be you're doing sankirtan, distributing books, and you're doing quite well, and every morning your score is read out and the devotees all clap. But you start thinking, oh yes, very good. Then someday they forget to read out your score. And then you think, what? How could they do that? and you get upset, and then you go out, and then you can't get into it. So this is an anatta arising from improper performance of devotional activity, that you let some misconception grow up along with your performance of devotional service. And in fact, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he also mentions that money may come and name and fame may come and you may become attached, which sounds very much like Tarangarangani, but there's a subtle difference between the two. That is, that on the level of Tarangarangani, money is coming and a little name and fame may also come, but the devotee is actually making an effort to cultivate those things. Let me make a plan so people will give me money. When I go into the life member's house, I'll just mention, oh, by the way, I'm going to India soon, and I don't have enough money for my ticket. Just drop it in somewhere, making an effort. But the way he explains this particular anatta arising from the improper performance of bhakti, because it's the devotee will have made more advancement. But the devotee is not looking for these things at all, but they just come. And even though he's not making any effort, but they just come, and still the devotee may become affected. Whereas on the level of Tarangarangani, the devotee is actually making an effort to get these things. Then the fourth type of anatta, main type of anatta, and it's actually the main type of anatta, anatta's arising from aparad, which basically means the 10 offenses. You all know the 10 offenses. This is the worst type, most dangerous type. We made a couple of notes on page 6 in this regard, that when we say aparad, we mean the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy names specifically. And we don't mean the seva aparads. Seva aparads means that in Nectar of Devotion there's one chapter, or one or two, one I think, offenses to be avoided. And it begins with entering the temple with your shoes on. I don't know if you, I hope you're familiar with that list of offenses. And they're relatively much more minor than the 10 offenses. So these are called seva aparads. You could have a look in Nectar of Devotion if you want to get the details. The chapter offenses to be avoided, and the first one is to enter the temple with shoes on. Then another one is to offer your obeisances and not recite the pranam mantra out loud. And then there's a whole list of them. But Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that when we refer to anathas arising from aparad, we don't mean those, because generally they're relatively minor, and generally the effects are cleansed away just by your regular engagement in devotional service. Or alternatively, or additionally, like when you do deity worship at the end, you recite mantras for forgiveness of offenses. Those of you who do deity worship would know those mantras. Like Aparada Sahasrani, Maha Mantra, Aparada Sahasrani, Kriyante, etc. There's a number of mantras which we use quite regularly. So he explains that either through just your regular engagement in devotional service, or, although of course it could be combined with reciting these mantras, then the effects of these seva aparads are generally cleansed away. As long as the seva aparads are performed unknowingly. But if you perform them knowingly, like one is when you enter the temple, you have to offer your obeisances. So if you don't really know that, and you walk into the temple and you don't offer your obeisances, there's no real offense. Or if it's to be taken as an offense, the effects will be cleansed away quite easily. But if you're running around busily, and you have to run into the temple and you think, well, I'm too busy to offer my obeisances, let me just run in and then run out, Then he says, in this case, seva aparad becomes the seventh offense in the chanting of the holy names. To commit sinful activity on the strength of being Krishna conscious, something like that, or on the strength of chanting the holy names. So I hope that's clear. So then just to make it particularly clear how serious this type of offense is, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this type of offense can just devastate a person's devotional kripa. And even a person who's quite advanced can come to the point of losing interest in Krishna consciousness altogether if they commit offenses, they commit aparad. Then, on page 6, the removal of anathas, scientific evaluation of how the anathas may be eliminated. Now, if we look at the last two paragraphs there, first of all, the second to last paragraph regarding the sins arising from sin, the anathas arising from sin or piety. He says, when you come to the level of bhajana kriya, then the effects of your previous sin or your previous piety are generally eliminated. Actually, perhaps first of all, we should have a look at the first paragraph there under the heading removal of anathas. Five grades of eradication. First of all, limited, then pervasive, then general, complete, and even more than complete, absolute. So five levels of elimination or eradication. So regarding previous sin or previous piety, when you begin your devotional service, your previous sin and previous piety is generally eradicated, meaning to quite a large extent. When you come to the level of nishta, it's more or less completely eradicated. And on the level of asakti, nishta, then there's ruchi, then asakti before bhava, then these types of things are absolutely eradicated without any trace. And then anathas arising from the improper performance of devotional service. Somewhat similar sequence, not quite the same, but there are similarities. On the level of bhajana kriya, eradication is limited, meaning just a little. Because the whole idea there is that before you perform bhajana kriya, then you haven't had any opportunity to make mistakes while performing your devotional activities, because you haven't been performing any. You only really start performing them when you come to the level of bhajana kriya. So therefore, the eradication is limited. But when a person comes to the level of nishta, then just like with previous sin and previous piety, the eradication is complete. And then the next level up, ruchi, it's absolute. But then the anathas arising from aparad, it's really quite a different thing. On the level of bhajana kriya, eradication is limited. Naturally, before you've really taken up devotional service, you haven't really had the opportunity to commit any good offenses. It's only when you're performing devotional service that you can make offenses in devotional service. If you're unknowing, then it's not really aparad. So, when you come to the level of nishta, then it's pervasive. On the level of bhava, general, on the level of prema, complete, and when you actually into your eternal relationship with Krishna, only at that point does it become absolute. In other words, a person who's on the level of bhava, then there can still be the effects of previous nama parad there. Although there won't be any effects from previous sin, previous piety or any previous mistakes, by the time you come to Nishta, generally you'll have stopped making mistakes in your devotional service. So generally we'd understand that someone who's on the level of bhava, any difficulty which arises is because of offenses. There can't really be any other cause. Can't really be your previous karma because it's all gone. Can't be mistakes because you've stopped making mistakes. And it's not mentioned here, I'll just mention though a very interesting thing, that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he makes the point that people like Chitraketu, who was cursed by Durga in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam for laughing when he saw Durga sitting on Lord Shiva's lap, he was in his relationship with the Lord. So that means like this level of being absolutely free of aparad. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that even though he had to accept the curse, and he accepted the curse, he became a demon, but it didn't affect his consciousness. He was Vritrasura, but he was still on that level of pure love of God. And he also makes the same point about Jaya and Vijaya, although it's a little sort of harder to comprehend how it might apply to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. But we know specifically that Vritrasura was a pure devotee, even though at the same time he was functioning as a demon. Jiva Goswami makes an interesting point in Krishna Sandarbha about Hiranyakashipu. He says that Hiranyakashipu had a spiritual body. His body wasn't material, which was connected with this idea of, in certain regards, his position not actually being affected by the by being cursed or by aparad. So we'll just quickly go over these five here. These five are anathas. They're not considered to be as serious as the main four which we've just discussed, but they're there. And they tend to be more prominent in the later stages of anatha nivritti as a person is coming to the point of nishta, steadiness. First of all, laya, L-A-Y-A, refers to the tendency to fall asleep during hearing and chanting. He says the tendency to fall asleep during kirtan, hearing or remembering, in order of increasing tendency. Meaning that while you're having kirtan, it's not likely that you'll fall asleep. It's relatively unlikely, although some people do. When you're hearing, it's more likely. That I'm sure we all know. And when you're simply remembering Krishna, then it's even more likely. So this is laya, L-A-Y-A, the tendency to sleep during Krishna conscious activity. Then vikshepa refers to an attraction to mundane subject matters while engaged in devotional service. For example, gossiping while chanting japa. Or you're chanting japa, someone walks past with a Time magazine. If you happen to have that particular weakness, and you just, then you, it just eats at your mind, and you just have to get that magazine. Anyway, vikshepa, an attraction towards mundane topics while you're engaged in devotional activities. Then apratipati, the inability to perform kirtan, hearing, chanting, or remembering particularly, even when there's an absence of the first two, laya and vikshepa. Even when you're not sleepy and there aren't any mundane things to distract you, but still you find yourself unable to become absorbed. That's called vikshepa. I mean, apratipati. then kashaya means traces of the tendency to become angry or greedy or proud, like that. Traces of those tendencies. Kashaya, traces of the tendency to become angry or greedy or proud or like that due to past bad habits. Traces. Obviously, when a person's on the level of Bhajana Kriya, then it's not just a matter of traces, but they have very strong tendencies towards these lower qualities. But kashaya means that the devotee is actually making considerable advancement, approaching the level of really being fixed in devotional service, but still these traces will be there sometimes. Yeah. Then rasasvada. Wait a minute, where are we? Yes, rasasvada, that's the last one. And it's the basic idea is inability to absorb the mind in devotional activities, particularly hearing, chanting, and remembering, if there is some opportunity for material sense pleasure. Yeah, it's a little... I mean, it's quite similar in certain regards to vikshepa. The inability to absorb the mind in hearing, chanting, remembering, and in Krishna consciousness, if one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. Vikshepa was more regarding tendency to become distracted by mundane talk. And this is in a more general sense, getting the opportunity for some sense gratification of some sort. And then Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that nishta appears when these become absent. Now obviously, the tendency to fall asleep during hearing, chanting, or remembering, a person on the level of Bhajana Kriya is obviously going to have that tendency. So it's not that these are simply, that you only find these on the level of, like when a person's approaching nishta. But the thing is, they'll tend to be more prominent in the absence of the others. What I might do, if any of you would like, is just print out all of these. In fact, I just thought of including these and these this morning. Four types of anathas only. So I'll try and print it out and have them for you tomorrow. So, some comments or questions, Janmashtami brother?
The anarthas in the level of Bhajana Kriya actually describe the anarthas. Whereas in anartha nirvritti, it's more the cause that's emphasized of the anartha, where there actually isn't a description so much of the anartha. Do you understand what I mean?
I know what you mean.
The focus of analyzing what's going on.
Yeah, in a sense, but at the same time, there are also some distinctions. Of course, there is overlapping throughout all these three levels.
What I'm getting at is that it's a little hard to understand, you know, like if one were to try and analyze, well, what's going on? How this book is coming up? And where is it coming from? And It's a little hard to, you know, like just in general, you can say, okay, well, I'm making offenses to the holy name, and then there's a reaction over there. Now, is this a reaction that's coming from the offense to the holy name? Is it coming because of my past sinful activities? Is it coming, or maybe it doesn't really so much matter where it's coming from, but still it's there. Whereas, you know, in Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, we, you know, it's pretty clear. You know, that this is an anartha that's going on, but that it doesn't really give you the source of it so much with that. I guess with the Nistita Bhajana Kriya, it would be just some previous conditions.
Yeah, it's more like that. A person's just beginning So they're really just coming from material life with so much conditioning and so many bad habits, which tend to spill into one's initial efforts in devotional service. But, you know, on the level of Bhajana Kriya, like offenses in the very, very early, and offenses, aparad isn't considered aparad until one does it knowingly, really. We're not like studying Madhurya Kadambini as such. If we were, I mean, there's a whole lot more information there. And he makes the point that aparad isn't considered aparad, and you don't get the effect of aparad if you do it unknowingly. So when someone is like a very innocent new devotee, then they're going to be full of all sorts of nonsense. But it's not really so much in terms particularly of aparad. Now, of course, it'll be connected with previous sin and previous piety. Thing is that as a person advances more, it tends to become more clear what is coming from previous sin, what's coming from previous piety, how the effects of mistakes made in devotional service are affecting you, how your offenses are affecting you, to the point that as a person makes more and more advancement, they may be able to pinpoint that this is happening to me because I did this, because I committed this offense, therefore I'm getting this specific reaction. So, of course, when a person first begins, it's like, it's a bit of a mess, as you say. A whole lot of gook or gunk or whatever is just there, like being in mud and trying to break out. Till finally, one comes to this level, it's like quite a rarefied level, you could say, quite an elevated level. Anatha is still present, but mainly just in terms of sometimes not being so attracted to hearing and chanting, or sometimes experiencing some sort of attraction to some other subject, or some trace of some mundane emotions just before one comes to Nishta. So of course all these three stages or three categories, they're all very much intertwined with each other. And these five will certainly be present on the level of Bhajana Kriya.
Do these later analysis, are they also sequential as with the
He doesn't indicate that, no. Mataji?
Above five.
Right. Yeah, well, as far as children go, the general idea is that there are degrees of responsibility for a child. At a certain point, they begin to get some responsibility until finally when they're actually like young adults, wherever the point may be, where they're able to live independently of their parents, then they're completely responsible. When they're just helpless infants, obviously, well, the idea, as far as their karma is concerned at least, is the parents get all the karma. When the child's a helpless little baby being fed whatever by the parents get the reactions. But then gradually as the child grows up and becomes more of an individual and starts expressing their individuality more, they start to get more and more responsibility till they reach, I don't know exactly what the point would be, but maybe their late teens or around 20 or something like that, where they actually become independent individuals. Anyway, you know, it would depend perhaps on the capacity of the child to understand it, as far as like committing offenses is concerned. You know, just because you tell a child doesn't mean that you've made it clear to the child to the point that they've understood. and then they can act. So, you know, I think parents would tend to be quite responsible for any offences that a child might commit. And the child would tend to be less responsible, I mean, until the child really starts to get a little bit older. I guess that's why it says, don't become a guru, don't become a parent, because you can get yourself implicated. Yes, my mantra for all.
Could you explain a little bit more about this abhinivesha?
Uh-huh.
Is it like one thing Srila Prabhupada was referring to some innocent, like an innocent offense that one does due to some deeply rooted habit that he had before he became a devotee? Like suppose, for example, before you became a devotee, you were addicted to smoking marijuana. And then you're preaching to somebody, and then they pass you a marijuana cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Without any type of consideration, you just,
yeah,
you take a smoke and you pass it on. You probably mentioned something about that in one lecture.
My understanding of abhinivesh is that it means things like, deep within us, we are prone to not want to serve Krishna, right? That's why we're here in this material world. Deep within us, we have a tendency to want to enjoy sense gratification. That comes out in each particular body we get. In terms of the body, you get a male body, then you want to enjoy in a male way. You get a female body, you want to enjoy in a female way. But that deep propensity to enjoy, that's my understanding of what is abhinivesh. Like the deeper level of our material conditioning, the more general elements of our material conditioning, the propensity to become attached to a body, generally, whatever the body may be. You know, when you get the body, then you become attached and you act in terms of the body. So now that's more like the immediate level of rag or material attachment. But the tendency to become attached to having to your material body, that's more the idea of abhinivesh. Do you follow? Krishna, what is it? Krishna Bahiramukha? Krishna Bulyajiv, Bhogyavanchakari. We've turned our backs on Krishna and we have this desire to enjoy sense gratification for so many lifetimes. So these deep-rooted propensities for material existence.
Causes and willingness to serve Krishna.
Yeah, we're getting right down to that level. These very deep parts of our unconscious existence, really, but things which are spurring us on in our material existence generally. Last question, Mataji.
I'm trying to extend it further and ask, is it by nature that we're trying to re-establish Vanashramdhara, or at least look towards re-establishing,
right,
we have these viewpoints of ourselves somehow or other fitting into one of these different,
right,
activities? And we're just hearing recently that those who are in the Kshatriya category actually have a sense of false ego, that they are the controllers, and it's even harder.
Right. Yes, the tendency to want to enjoy, to want to control, the tendency to think that I'm very qualified, you know, these more deep-rooted parts of our nature. This is connected with the idea of abhinivesh. So for tomorrow, could you please read about Putana? You can also read the next chapter, which is pages 7 and 8, briefly analyzing all the demons, but main thing I would say is read about Putana. And if you can read this article from The Harmonist, which starts on page 11, I would suggest you read it because it's extremely interesting, and we'll try and discuss that also tomorrow. And we'll also have our little drama if our respected player, actors, actresses could You don't have to learn your lines. Just be a little familiar with the basic flow so you can sort of express the moods as they come. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.